This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, the Michigan Public Radio Network's Capitol Bureau Chief Rick Pluta tells us what's waiting for state lawmakers when they get back from their summer recess. But first, what is the ideal time to start school? That depends in part on the age of the children involved. Ridge, the online news service of the Center for Michigan, recently featured an article on school start times called "Asleep at the Desk: How School Begins for Many Michigan Teens." We're going to talk about this issue with one of the people who's quoted in that Bridge article. Dave Campbell is superintendent of the Kalamazoo Regional Education Service Agency, also known as KRESA. Thank you for being here.
Well, thanks for having me.
I want to begin with your quote in this story. You say that this is one of a long list of things we do that is not best for kids. Why is it not best for kids?
Well, that's an interesting statement I made there. And really, within the context of what I said, what I was getting at is there's a lot of things we do as a society that are not necessarily in the best interest of students' learning. That would be the broader context. And I think this school starting time issue is a classic example. The research is pretty clear that teenagers really would perform better if they started school later. And the schools that have tried that, you know, they've seen some good success, primarily because it improves attendance and tardiness, which is just logical. But we don't do it very often. We don't tend to have high schools in particular starting later in the morning because there's so many other issues and factors that are really more societal related than just school. And so you know, there are a number of things, and we can talk about some of those later. So, yeah, it's a hard issue because when you think about what you'd have to do to have a high school start later in the day, somebody's going to have to start earlier in the day. And unless you go to a single bus run system, which is very expensive and very difficult to manage because you need double the number of buses and you need double the number of drivers, and there's already a terrific shortage of bus drivers. And if you have to need twice as many drivers and they're going to make about half the amount of money because they're working half the amount of hours, you're going to have a staggering bus driver shortage. And so, right, it'd be best for student learning to maybe to have the secondary students start later, but how are we going to get all the kids to school on time is really a difficult challenge because staying in a double bus run system, which is far more efficient, well, then you'd have to have the elementary kids start earlier. Now, if you start the elementary students earlier, then they're going to be the ones standing on the side of the road at about 6:30 in the morning on a cold winter morning. And there's going to be a lot of folks that don't think that's a real good idea. And that tends to win at the end of the day is, you know, do you really want little children out on the side of the road in the dark in the winter? And there are other issues, of course, that come up. The Bridge magazine talked about the athletic schedules. That always comes up. And that's difficult to deal with, but I'm sure there's ways around it. A lot of shared programming, you know, the CAMSE program, Math Science Center program, the Education for Employment, Education for the Arts. We share a lot of programming, and so it's a difficult thing to pull off when you're sharing a lot of programming school to school.
So high school students start the earliest,
yes.
and then middle school and then elementary is how it works in most districts.
Yeah, typically something like that. A lot of times it's divided by elementary and secondary, so you make the division somewhere around fifth grade or something. It's going to be different district to district depending on their grade configuration.
Now, to explain here about how transportation works, how staggered do the times have to be for bus pickup in order to make sure that buses can drop off the earlier students and then get back out and pick up students who would be going to school
later? That's a great question, and it's a very important question. I can't imagine being able to do it in less than an hour because you're going to have to, you know, you got to go out and run the routes again. In some areas where there's a lot of traffic, in a more urban area, you're going to have more traffic lights. That's going to slow things down. In a more rural area, you're just going to have more miles to travel, and that's going to slow things down. So 75 minutes is what I used to kind of use in my head in the district that I was K-12 superintendent in.
So going back to that quote, if we were just to simply say, okay, we are going to do what's best for learning right now, what would that mean? What time would we be starting school for high schoolers?
Oh, I think, Minnesota's been doing a lot of good work on this the last 10 years or so. And I've heard about the 9 o'clock start being a good time for high schoolers. They're going to be more attentive. The later start's going to make it a little easier to get up in the morning. These are all real issues, but we all have body clocks. Adults do, too. And there's times when, you know, my body clock may not, you know, I tend to have a, I probably shouldn't say this, but I have a little lull late afternoon. And that's very common for adults to have that kind of late afternoon lull. Well, I oftentimes have meetings that I need to be on, and I need to be attentive, and I need to be fully engaged, and I am. And so you make the adjustments, you know, whether it's a, some people drink coffee. So there's a reality that, that sometimes we as individuals have to fit into the larger society. Employers have their work schedules. And you know, the employers don't always set the work schedule around the sleep needs of their employees. We would love it if we could. A lot of people like to work from home, and maybe they're on a flexible schedule and they can do that. But the reality is, in society, there's a lot of group norms. There's group structures, and sometimes you just have to conform to that and figure out how to make it work for you as an individual. Maybe it's the teenagers need to go to bed earlier.
Well, and that's a point that came up in the Bridge article. Yeah. That was some of the comments that people had in response to this was, well, you know, life is about figuring out how you're going to organize your time, how you're going to show up when you're supposed to show up and make sure that you're functioning. And is it better maybe to be learning that lesson in high school than to be learning it later in life when maybe you already have a job and you're expected to show up for it?
Yeah, I would argue that it is. On the other hand, I mean, you do want to you want schools to be as much focused and tailored to the needs of individuals as possible. But a school is not an individual. It's a group of staff, a group of students, and you try to do what's best for the whole. And this late start idea, I've always loved it, and I've always thought, you know, that could work on a regional or even a state level. Because of all the shared programming concepts, that would really be difficult on the shared programs to have some schools starting late and some starting early. It would essentially make those unmanageable. They would end up imploding if the kids are on different schedules. I thought, well, maybe that'd be a good thing for maybe a smaller state, maybe a Rhode Island or someone like that to pave the way. Does this truly make a difference? But then again, now you're dealing with the bus driver situation, you know, and do you really want the younger children out at the side of the road? And, you know, when you look at when you're making decisions, a lot of times we use the old Maslow's hierarchy of needs. We always talk about it, and it's important because at first people must be safe.
We have to make sure they get to school.
Exactly.
And when they get there, we can do our best with teaching them.
Exactly. And I don't think a lot of parents would be comfortable with young children. Maybe they would. Maybe I'm off base on that. And maybe it's a conversation we should be having. But that seems to be the tone anytime I've heard this come up in the last 15, 17 years as an administrator.
I found the comment about extracurricular activities interesting because it seems to me that there's two ways of looking at that. One is that part of the reason high schoolers may not be able to go to bed earlier is if they're involved in sports. You have a basketball game that could run well past 9 o'clock, and then you still have to get home. And anyone that's been in competitive sports knows you just don't go to bed right away. You need some time to unwind. And, you know, there could be homework that didn't get done, et cetera. Same thing could go for theater, music, that sort of thing. At the same time, there's some people saying, well, if you start later, then you're running up against that time when these things could be beginning. How difficult an issue is that to try to get at?
That's a tough issue. I've heard of some schools that that actually had their practices early in the morning, so that those students who were choosing to be in athletics, they would be the ones to get up early. Then, of course, you know, the jam being is you're right on. You don't just, you know, go home after a basketball game and immediately go to sleep. There is an unwind time, and so those kids would end up being very sleep deprived. And sleep deprivation is a very real issue for all, not just students, but for adults. It's one of the key things that we need to do in taking care of ourselves and our health is making sure we're getting enough sleep. And American culture right now is very, very fast-paced, and there's very little margin in many people's lives to get an adequate amount of sleep. So it's as real of an issue as poor nutrition and not enough exercise. Doctors talk about it all the time because it's really important.
If you were making a list of things that get in the way of a student achieving their true potential in the classroom,
would lack of sleep make the top 10, the top 5? I mean, I realize, you know, we're probably just guessing here.
I think in my list, yeah, it would probably make a top 10. I think the number of school days that students have, that'd be in my top 10 too. If you look at the performance levels in the top performing nations and academics, most of, not all of them, their students are in school, you know, significantly longer days than our students are, and significantly more days. And so that's another thing that I think the United States needs to take a much closer look at is how much time students are in school and the number of days. So we deal with the summer slide, that summer learning loss, more than many nations do, because our students have so much time off in the summer. And that's a very hard thing to accomplish, and it's certainly not free to have school running, operating. So it's important that, you know, parents realize that they are the best and first teacher of a child, and try to supplement so that the summer learning loss is mitigated or minimized as much as possible. So all the good programs that the libraries are offering and various camps and really anything a parent can do, or a grandparent or uncle, aunt, friends of the family can do to engage children is time worthwhile. I used to go to a neighbor and just play dominoes with her. She was a sweet old lady, and we'd just engage. She'd tell stories. Anything where you're talking to a child, talking to engaging them, taking them shopping, talking about what it is that you're buying, what should we have for dinner tonight, what ingredients do you think we'll need. Anything where there's just a good, healthy interaction with a child is just healthy for the brain. And those kinds of activities, as simple day-to-day, can actually mitigate some of the learning loss that occurs during the summer.
To wrap up our discussion on school start times, you noted in the article in Bridge that when you were the superintendent of Olivet, that this was a topic that came up often, but we'd always think, do we really want the young kids out at the end of the road in the dark? And is that the thing that prevents any serious discussion of this topic from moving forward is, as you said before, the Maslow's higher needs, safety comes first?
I think it's certainly one of the big different communities are going to have different issues that hit them particularly hard. I know some communities that it's the athletic voice, you know, but do you really schedule a whole school around athletics? It's not all students that are participating. I know that's significant.
Another big one, child care needs, is another one that comes up.
Yeah. Oh, and the students' work needs. A lot of high schoolers are working after school, and they want to be able to get to work so they can earn some money. And if you start school later, then it's going to be later for them to get to work. And so there's a lot of different issues, but it's a good issue to explore, and I'm glad Bridge Magazine put it on our radar.
You have recently been appointed to Governor Snyder's 21st Century Education Commission. As you understand it, what's your charge here? What are you supposed to look at, and what sort of recommendations are you supposed to make when you get to the end of the work?
That's a great question. The governor is really quite clear in the State of the State address back in January that he was going to create a 21st Century Education Commission. Because he believes that our governance, funding, and accountability structures, those are the key three, governance, funding, and accountability structures, just don't fit this century real well. And he talked about that they were developed a long time ago, and indeed most of our governance structures developed more in the mid-60s. That's when intermediate school districts were created, for example. That's when community colleges were created, for example. And the funding structures largely from the 60s, updated in Proposal A in 1993. And what he was basically saying is he doesn't think that the governance, funding, and accountability structures fit the needs of the education system today, the needs of employers, needs of students, and he would like a commission. He talked about it being bipartisan. And quite frankly, I looked at the list, and I'm impressed. I'm impressed. I do think it's fairly bipartisan. I think it's multi-stakeholder, and was pleased to see, you know, a number of different educators and business people and people that have some real policy expertise and the unions involved. And it's a pretty good bipartisan group of 25 people that are going to be focusing on governance, funding, and accountability structures. I'm hoping – now I'm just going to talk about my hope,
right?
Okay, because we haven't met yet, so yeah. I really don't know what's going to occur. My hope is that we're going to take a real good close look at what we currently do to get a solid base understanding as a group of how we currently govern, fund, and hold schools accountable. So start with that common base, because there'll be people coming into the commission that aren't working in schools every day and really may not know how it works. And then secondly, I hope that we look very carefully at what's working very well in some top-performing states and some top-performing nations. I like to look to Canada on this issue, because Canada is culturally pretty similar to us. People always like to get me talking about Singapore and places like that, and everything I've read and heard about the Far East is so different culturally that some of the practices may not translate well to Michigan. But I think Canada's pretty, a lot more similar. And so I have spent some time studying, how they govern and fund and hold schools accountable and
hold kids accountable. Do they seem to be getting better results than the United States?
They really are. They're typically listed in the, top 10. Canada's doing rather well, Ontario in particular. And so that's an area where I think there's a cultural similarity. Certainly, definitely some difference, particularly in our urban areas, are different by nature than some of their urban areas. But there's lessons to be learned there. There's definitely lessons to be learned from states like Massachusetts that has a rich tradition of education and is consistently the only state in the United States that compares very well with the top-performing nations. And so I'm hoping that the commission will take a good look at what's working and not get so much into the message of innovation, and I'm all about innovation. But sometimes when you're dealing with other people's children, we need to be doing more about evidence-based practices and what is working with children around the world and around the country, rather than trying to innovate our way to excellence when there are practices that are really working very well. I prefer to look at those first. There's always a space for innovation, and there always needs to be a culture where we're trying some new things. But let's first make sure we're implementing what is proven to work well.
Dave Campbell, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Gordon.
Dave Campbell is superintendent of the Kalamazoo Regional Education Service Agency.